Kurt and Kate Mornings, not just on the radio.
It's a podcast, too.
The lives of great men and women of faith are replete with fascinating and beneficial stories, not fictional stories. These are actual events from the experiences of those believers.
Yeah, and we hear from it from one of our favorite people, Vance Christie. He wrote Timeless Stories, God's Incredible Work in the Lives of Inspiring Christians.
Think of this as snapshots from the lives of these believers who have gone before us. Here's Vance. What Vance has done with this book, and Vance, I'm halfway through this now, some of the stories I was aware of, some are new to me, is that he's lifted snapshots out of the lives of these people that he has studied, and some of their very significant stories he's lifted, and then he's broken up each chapter into a topic. Like, for instance, you've got family, service, faith, you know, things like this, witness, forgiveness. So he's got the topics in the chapter, and then he has several stories in the lives of a few different believers, and it's so good. Vance, you used to, you mentioned, I believe in the book, that you used to share some of these types of stories with your kids when they were small.
Yes, one of my favorite memories from the time when our three daughters were very young, they're now adults and wives and moms themselves, but back when they were very young, we had a routine at bedtime. We would read a story to them, usually a Bible story, but sometimes I would offer to tell a story from the lives of a great man or woman of the Christian faith. And then we would sing a song with them and pray and put them off to bed. And one night when I offered to tell a story to them before we prayed together, I was so amused when these three gals, they were, two of them were preschoolers, and I think our oldest at the time was a first grader. The three of them started spontaneously cheering as though they were in a competition, and two of the daughters were chanting, "Moody, Moody."
Yeah, no, this is great. I love it.
And the third daughter was chanting, "Hudson, Hudson," for Hudson Taylor. Dwight Moody and Hudson Taylor. They knew the sorts of stories I told. And even from that young age, they just loved to hear these stories of these men and women who served the Lord so faithfully and so well. And so it just brought pleasure to my heart to hear the joy that they received in hearing those stories. And they continued to enjoy them throughout all the years that we were raising our daughters. When this book was published, we actually included it in our family devotions and read right through the book together as part of our devotions.
See, this is one of the cool things about the book. You can pick it up and just dip into it, and it will whet your appetite for maybe one of the full-length biographies that Vance has written. But maybe it's an introduction to some of these great heroes of the faith. But it's a wonderful devotional. I mean, it's just, I love it, love it, love it. All right, so everybody, Producer Mark, you need to help us on this. Kate,
okay.
Let's start chanting. Moody, 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 Moody. Okay, a story from the life of D.L. Moody. What about the hack driver story?
Okay. Dwight Moody was the world's most prominent evangelist in the latter half of the 1800s. But while he was back home in Northfield, Massachusetts, he held a summer Bible conference there for students. And also his ministry organization had a Christian girls' school there. It was called a girls' seminary. And this world-renowned evangelist, he often took the time to ride in his buggy the 2 miles from the school into town, into Northfield, Massachusetts. I think I used the wrong town name a moment ago. It was Northfield, not Northampton. Mm-hmm. But in any event, he would ride into town and either bring students to the school or maybe take students from the conference back to town where they could catch the train. And one rainy day, there was a man who arrived at the train station in Northfield with two women, and he was looking around for someone to drive them to the Northfield Hotel down the street. And he saw what was called a hack driver, basically a taxi driver using a horse-drawn carriage. He saw a heavyset hack driver sitting there, and this man said that he was waiting to transport some seminary girls out to the school. And the man who had just gotten off the train said, "Well, these girls are not the only people to be served. Now you just take us right up to the hotel." Well, the driver of the horse-drawn cab meekly complied and delivered them to their destination. And then he was quickly off before he could even be paid for having taken them up to the hotel. Turning to a bellboy standing by, the gentleman who had got off the train and insisted on being taken to the hotel asked, "Who was that driver?" And the boy responded, "Well, that was Mr. D.L." And the man asked,
"Uh-oh.
D.L. who?" And the boy said, "D.L. Moody." And the visitor gulped because he had come to Northfield to ask this renowned evangelist to admit a girl of his acquaintance to the already crowded school that Moody had there. The next day when he met Moody in person to make his request, he apologized profusely. Moody was greatly bemused by the incident, and the girl was admitted. But the thing I so appreciate about the story, besides the humor in it, is that Moody, here this world prominent evangelist, he was not above being treated like a mere hack driver. He was happy to serve people in that way.
The founder of the Moody Bible Institute's Moody Radio, D.L. Moody.
Thank you for taking some time to listen to this episode of the Kurt and Kate Mornings podcast. We always welcome a review with your thoughts and comments, and please feel free to subscribe and follow us as well.
George Mueller, if you could give us a little background on George Mueller, that would be great for those who don't know about him. I love the story you share, "Come See What Our Father Will Do," about the little girl and George. So let's go ahead and dive into that one.
George Mueller is well known for operating a group of orphanages that ministered literally to thousands of kids per year in Bristol, England. His ministry was carried out back in the 1800s. And I'm going to punt on the story that you mentioned there, Kurt, if I may, but I would like to share another story from his life. The first 5 years that his orphanages were operating, the funds readily flowed in to support those ministries. And then all of a sudden, they ran into a period where their funds seemed to be in short supply. Now, the ministries of Mueller always made it a point to go to the Lord in prayer about their needs rather than making public appeals. But one thing that they would do is they published an annual report of the income that their ministries had had, and they included with those reports some testimonies of occasions where God had brought in gifts for their ministry. And during the spring of that tight time for their ministry, a man who was a supporter of the orphanages, he received one of the orphanage's annual reports, and in reading it, he thought of a sister of his who was a lady of considerable means, and he began praying that she too would be led by God to donate some of her valuable jewelry for the support of the orphans. Not long after that, Mueller received from that very woman a gift of a heavy gold chain, a ring set that was studded with 10 diamonds, also a pair of gold bracelets, and a cash donation of £2, equaling about 10 American dollars. And remembering that this was back in the 1830s, $10 back then would be probably closer to $300 nowadays.
Mm.
Well, before parting with that costly diamond-studded ring, Mueller took the ring and he neatly scratched or etched on a pane of glass in his living quarters the words Jehovah Jireh, which mean the Lord will provide. And as you know, those are words taken from Genesis 22:14, where the Lord provided a ram to be sacrificed in place of Abraham's son, Isaac. So Mueller scratches the words Jehovah Jireh, God, the Lord will provide, on a pane of glass. And many times afterwards, his heart would be cheered when he would catch sight of those words on his window, reminding him that the Lord had provided in the past, and he would continue to do so in the future.
Wow, this is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love that. I could sit here and talk about George Mueller all day long. But the reason why I mentioned the story about the little girl whose name is Abigail is because I'll tell you, well, first of all, the story has to do with John Townsend, who was a partner with George Mueller in ministry. So his young daughter, Abigail, they were just really tight. The families were tight. And he was walking with Abby in the garden one day of the orphanage. And basically, he took her by the hand and said, come and see what our father will do. So this is what happened. Leading her into the long dining room, they found the orphans standing at their places at the tables waiting for breakfast. But as Abigail later reported, there was nothing on the table but empty dishes. There was no food in the larder and no money to supply the need. Unruffled, Vance writes. George Mueller announced, children, you know we must be in time for school. And then raising one hand, he prayed simply, dear Father, we thank you for what you are going to give us to eat. Just then, a knock was heard at the door. It was opened to the local baker. Mr. Mueller, he explained, I couldn't sleep late last night. Somehow I felt you didn't have bread for breakfast, and the Lord wanted me to send you some. So I got up at 2:00 in the morning and baked some fresh bread and have brought it to you. But wait, there's more. Mm-hmm. After thanking the baker, George Mueller publicly praised God for his care. Children, he said with great delight, registering on his face the delight. He was smiling, he was beaming, and joy in his voice. We not only have bread, but we have the rare treat of fresh bread. Momentarily, we're turning another corner here, another knock came at the door. This time it was the milkman who revealed that his cart had broken down just outside the orphanage, and he desired to give the children his cans of fresh milk so he could unload and repair his wagon. Abigail later became known as Sister Abigail. She came to the United States, and she was ministering in Buffalo, New York. I had a show in Buffalo for a few years. I got a call one day on the show, and one of Abigail's descendants called me and said, I have this little book, this little biography about her story. I'd like to send it to you. So he sent it to me, and the book, I don't know if you can even find it. It's very obscure, but it tells a story of how she set up a ministry based on George Mueller's principles of just praying the money in. In Buffalo, she ministered to the homeless. She bought this beautiful home on Symphony Circle. Now, those from Buffalo know about it. It's like the old homes there. Beautiful area, historic area. And she went to a realtor because she wanted to open a home I think it was the ladies. And she's like, okay, well, I need to buy a house. She had no money. And he goes, well, where do you want to end up? You know, where do you want to look? And she said, Symphony Circle. And he's like, what are you talking about? You have no money. Long story short, the Lord provided in amazing ways. She bought a home on Symphony Circle, set up shop for years, all based upon the principles of George Mueller, trusting in the Lord alone, never asking for a dime. And that is the rest of that story.
Oh, I love that.
Amazing.
Yeah. All right. So before we let you go here, let's see, Vance, what about a Charles Spurgeon story? We want to make sure we include him. How about the unseen lamplighter?
Charles Spurgeon was probably the world's most prominent pastor in the decades of the later 1800s. I can't think of another. There were lots of prominent pastors in the day, but I can't think of one who would have had greater worldwide renown than he did, and his sermons continue to be read to this very day. But one evening in the late autumn, he was returning home from a speaking engagement. He was riding along in a horse-drawn cab, and he was approaching along the level ground at the base of a steep ridge called Herne Hill, which he was going to ascend when he got to it. And presently, off in the distance, he saw a light before him. And as he came near the hill, he watched that light gradually make its way up Herne Hill. And that single light left a train of what looked like stars in the darkness behind it. And eventually, the line of those newborn lights reached from the foot of the hill all the way to its summit. And what Spurgeon was viewing on that occasion was the work of a lamplighter. He could not see the lamplighter in the darkness. Back in those days, London's street lights burned gas, but they still had to be lit individually. And after that occasion, Spurgeon reflected on what he had seen, and he said, I did not see the lamplighter. I do not know his name, nor his age, nor his residence, but I saw the lights which he had kindled, and these remained when he himself had gone his way. As I rode along, I thought to myself, how earnestly do I wish that my life may be spent in lighting one soul after another with the sacred flame of eternal life. I would myself be as much as possible unseen while at my work, and would vanish into eternal brilliance above when my work is done.
Wow.
I think that story so well exemplifies what Spurgeon's life was all about, passing on the light of Christ and the Christian gospel to person after person, not wanting to be in the forefront himself, but he often spoke of wanting to be hidden behind the cross as he shared the light of Christ with others. And then he was ready to himself step into eternal light in the presence of the Lord when his earthly work was done.
The lamplighter story. I love it. Vance Christie, our guest, and some of the other folks featured in his book, John Wesley. Of course, Corey Ten Boom, you know, and Amy Carmichael as well, and William Booth, Salvation Army, just to name a few. As usual, Vance, I have to give you props and thank you for all of the work that you do to bring these stories to people who have never heard maybe of some of the folks here. And make them fun to read and reintroducing these great heroes of the faith to each and every one of us, to a new generation. That's an important calling.
Well, it's been a great privilege to write the life stories of several people. And I would have to say that Timeless Stories was probably the most enjoyable book that I've had the opportunity to write, simply because we were gleaning the best stories from the lives of these individuals and bringing them into one collection in this book. And if people are able to pick up a copy and read it, I think they'll find themselves both encouraged and instructed in their walk with the Lord.
Hey, I just checked it out on Amazon here. Only 5 copies left. Wow. I'm just saying, only 5 copies left if you want to use Amazon, so I'm not surprised either. Vance, thanks for being with us. Blessings, my friend. Until we meet again, we hope that you have a wonderful day, wonderful week, and we'll see you a little later on.
Thank you so much, Kurt and Kate, and God bless your important ministries.
Thanks for listening to Kurt and Kate Mornings Podcast. Please take a minute to follow, subscribe, and review us. And no matter where in the world you are, you can listen to us live from 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays on the Moody Radio app.